All right, we got to hurry it up. We only have like a 20-minute show, so we got to get a lot in a short period of time. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Tuesday, the 4th of September. And yeah, I know it's Tuesday. Do you know it's Tuesday? The only reason I know it's Tuesday is because I wrote a little post-it note on my computer said, hey, it's Tuesday. Good morning. Welcome. We had a holiday yesterday. Hopefully, if you were laboring, then hopefully you had a good Labor Day. If you were not laboring, hopefully you had a good holiday Labor Day. And we welcome everybody to our program. So here's what's happening. We are broadcasting the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, the confirmation hearings, beginning at 9:30 today. They will begin at 9 o'clock tomorrow. We'll be off for most of the week. We'll be back with the roundtable panel in full on Friday. So today they are nice enough to give us a half hour show, and we're going to make the most of that.
So
this morning,
I don't get it. So will there always be a half an hour every morning? No,
no. So today, because of today is not right. The questions. It's just opening statements. So it's a little bit truncated given what they're doing today. All right. So let me introduce everybody quickly, and we'll get to the subjects at hand. I didn't even bother sending out really topics today because I just sort of thought it was obvious of what we'd be talking about, and we'll just see where the conversation takes us. Libby Post is with us, political consultant to the stars. Good morning. How are you?
Good. Okay.
Always good to see you. J.P. Miller is with us of the Empire Report. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
I can't read enough about I know your site. I can't read enough about this NBC drama.
Oh, my God.
That's interesting.
Between the NBC drama and the New Yorker Festival drama, yeah. I am all in. This is good stuff.
Then, Joe, you better quickly remind people, because most people have no idea what you're talking about.
The NBC drama is over Ronan Farrow and his investigation into Harvey Weinstein and the fact that NBC tried to squash that, or did squash it. And finally, Ronan Farrow said, okay, well, then I'll go to The New Yorker and do the story. And, oh, by the way, I'll do it and win a Pulitzer Prize, which is what happened. Now, NBC's news president, Andy Lack, you know, Matt Lauer's best friend.
Now you're going to have to tell that story.
No, they're good friends. They're buddies.
And also the person that signed Megyn Kelly to an $18 million deal.
Right. And in his world is imploding a little bit. But he wrote an 11 pages memo to people and saying, oh, by the way, this is why we did this, and this is why we didn't run it. And, oh, by the way, he was also the person that squashed the story that had the grab them by the blank tape that they were sitting on that they never aired.
Yes.
So he's got a lot to answer for. Meanwhile, over at the New Yorker.
There's a real lack over there.
The New Yorker Festival is always a big cultural event in New York, and it's very eclectic, and they have music, and they have photography, and they have art, and they have politics, and they have prose, and they do all kinds of incredible things. They had this amazing lineup of people. They announced the lineup. That lineup included Steve Bannon and everybody who was, well, not everybody, but Jimmy Fallon, John Mulaney, Hasan Minhaj, Jim Carrey, others
said,
bye-bye now. We're not coming.
Because
if he's going to appear,
Bannon,
we're not going to appear. We're all for free speech, but maybe don't have what we feel we deem to be a white supremacist on the bill. So then David Remnick, the editor of New Yorker, assembles the staff on the holiday and says, okay, we're going to disinvite Steve Bannon. And most of, and I haven't read the list as of this morning, but most of the people who said, I'm out, still said, okay, but that was stupid. I'm still out. So we'll see how that goes. Alan Chartok is here as well.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right, now that we're all up to date on those stories, go ahead.
There's just one more thing to add to this, to the NBC part of this at any rate. Chucktown Todd has finally found his
voice,
moral center, his voice, and he wrote, I think it's in The Atlantic.
Yes.
A piece.
I read it.
Yeah, saying the media needs to fight back against the anti-media forces, against the fake news forces, which I was shocked, but I'm glad to see he's finally found
it. I read it because I saw it on the Empire page.
Mm-hmm. So did I.
And that's where I got it from.
That's right.
That's where I read it from.
Yep.
You are our source, JP. and we thank you.
Thank you.
So in the meantime, who's missing?
Well, this is a great story too. So I don't know. Am I allowed to say this?
I asked.
All right. So Mike Spain is not with us today because he was supposed to be today, and then he wrote us a note late last night and said he's not coming because he has an editorial board meeting with the governor.
Now, what's great about that story, because, you know, I want to just move ahead with all of this.
Governor Mario Cuomo, we should note.
Andrew Cuomo.
Mario dead, Andrew alive.
Would it only be so? So what happened? No, not that Andrew would be gone, but that Mario would be back.
Yes.
Don't you see? Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure everybody gets that. So here's what's great about this story.
It's just like roundtable on speed. Okay, let's go.
The lightning round. Right. It's great, isn't it?
Here's what's great about that. Rex, our friend Rex, the host of, and the boss of the Media Project, wrote a column this weekend because Andrew had been proving difficult to show up about an imaginary interview with the governor. Well, that I think the governor's people, a great political analyst who I'm not going to name here, JP, told me that he thought maybe the Cuomo people were getting a little worried about how this was all going to go. So this whole election business. So, and they're in a big mess. I don't want to go into it because it's too convoluted, but because he stood with Kathy Hochul as his lieutenant governor pick, but then suggested she scram, and she said, no, hell right. no, I won't go, and she's staying. And there's a fellow named Williams from Brooklyn who is running also for lieutenant governor because we have separate primaries in New York State, crazy system. But they run as a pair once they get together. So the lieutenant governors may be on different tickets. This is where it gets interesting. And everybody may be taking votes away from Andrew because if his lieutenant governor pick is different on the various parties that he's running on, he is screwed. QED.
But let's just remember that Jumaane Williams is not pro-choice and not pro-gay rights. We just need to put that out there.
Well, no, this is not a time for doing endorsements.
Well, no, I'm not endorsing anybody.
Yeah, sounded like you were.
I'm just making the point that people need to understand why, you know, that's part of the reason why the governor does not want him is because of that. The other thing is he doesn't want to repeat his father, which was Mario had to run with Al Del Bello, who beat Carl McCall in the first gubernatorial primary when Mario ran against Koch.
I don't want to be disrespectful, but I'm sticking with what I said. They're getting nervous. Mm-hmm. And this is one thing. I mean, you know, you could lose an election. Let's say, for example, not to bore everybody in Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont, Rhode Island, all the other places, Connecticut that we go to. There is always the possibility, of course, that this thing could really blow up. This would be a study in political science that people would be talking about for years to come.
And I don't think that it's specifically their race that they may be concerned about. They just see these other races around the country, the other primaries where people are really getting in trouble.
So it's not Cortez.
Right. No, not just her and the one in Florida recently. And then there's one in Massachusetts today
where, you know, Capuano.
Capuano, Congressman Capuano, has been in there for 20 years.
And a mainstay endorsed by none other than Deval Patrick, is really facing a very difficult run over there because it may well be that she upsets
apple cart.
Yeah, and you know, liberal white congressman, because that district has changed.
Mm-hmm. And very few people are talking about incumbent Governor Charlie Baker being challenged by a Trump lover on the right.
Really? Yeah, forget it. That ain't gonna.
Yeah, that's not gonna go anywhere.
Who's gonna show up to vote, though?
Well, that's always a good question. Mm-hmm. You know, Massachusetts, which is a very good state, I live there, has a rule, and the rule is if you are not signed up in either party,
you can vote in anybody's primary.
You can take a primary ballot in either one. Don't you see?
Mm-hmm. All right. Now that we only have about 12 minutes, so let me do
left.
This real quick. 12 minutes before we go over to MDR coverage of the Kavanaugh hearing. So,
unless they stall, in which case we'll be here longer.
No, we go right over to them. They're going to
take matter
it,
what.
No matter what,
you're taking up our airspace here.
At Judge Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court confirmation hearings, which begin in just a few moments, Republicans will present him as an experienced jurist and supporter of women. Democrats, guess what, will tell an entirely different story, painting him as a far-right extremist who would rock and, would roll back abortion rights and be very, very conservative. Let's go around the table here. We'll begin with Alan as to what we expect from the hearings here.
A lot of blah, blah, blah. Most of it will be boring. I can say that I do believe that it's a done deal. They got the votes. Though the one that I am a little angry with is Susan Collins.
And Lisa Murkowski.
But Collins always pretends that she might go either way, that she's in favor of women's rights and the rest of it. And she says something that is highly debatable. Based on this guy's public record, which is that he once told her that Roe versus Wade is a matter of established law.
Right.
And a lot of people don't believe him on that.
Not only that, but all the paperwork, all the papers that the White House is refusing to release.
Can you imagine?
I know.
Giving them how many pages?
It's like 100,000 pages or something like that.
The night before the hearing?
Right.
And now, I was watching a program, I think Morning Joe this morning, in which somebody had the idea that why don't you just take all of that stuff and put it out on the internet and let all the lawyers and everybody else out there read the 48,000 pages or whatever it is that's out there. But when they released it, what did they say? They said, this is classified, eyes only.
Yeah, right.
I will mention that Dianne Feinstein had a press conference just about 20 minutes ago in which she talked about all of this with the Judiciary Committee Democrats, speaking on the lengths that Senate Republicans have gone in order to keep Kavanaugh's records hidden, they say, from the Senate and American public. According to the senator, 93% of the records for Kavanaugh's tenure in the White House have not been provided to the Senate. 96% hidden from the public. She wanted to make that known before going into
criminal.
These hearings.
This is just another criminal conspiracy.
Here's a letter from Rocco, our friend Rocco, and you know what he says? He says, how can they have hearings if they don't have all the information on Kavanaugh? Why are the Democrats not walking out? Now, this is a big question, whether the Republicans under Schumer, or the Democrats under Schumer, have done right, whether they're not somebody used the term, why are they using butter knives, political butter knives, when, you know, they ought to be using something stronger?
Well, Alan, I will disagree with you a little bit on you saying that it might be boring. I think these hearings are going to be awesome. For people that love political theater, these hearings, I think, are going to be excellent. I'll be tuning into WAMC. You have to look at who's on the Judiciary Committee, like kind of the who's who of the Senate. Charles Grassley, Dianne Feinstein, Patrick Leahy, Lindsey Graham, Dick Durbin, Ted Cruz, all of these people love the national spotlight. They love the camera, so they're all going to be trying to get the most exciting interaction with the nominee and two potential 2020 candidates, Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, will be doing their best to fight this nominee. So I think it's going to be awesome political theater for nerds that like that kind of stuff like me.
And for all the women who are going to die in back alley abortions because of this man, if they roll back Roe v. Wade, which is very likely, political theater means absolutely nothing.
Could you carry that forward a little bit?
Because
like you're really disagreeing with JP. I just want to make sure what that level of disagreement
is. I think,
is.
Yes, there's going to be political theater. But let's look at the reality of the situation. Let's look at the consequences. If this man gets on and Roe v. Wade is pulled back, you will have abortion become illegal in probably 40 out of the 50 states, if not more. Okay, the East Coast and the West Coast will maintain legal abortion on the state level, and then all these other women in all the other states will be forced to go back into the 60s and the 50s before Roe v. Wade with back alley abortions, dying on the streets with coat hangers. And You can have all the political theater you want, and yes, it's fun to watch, but the reality of women's lives here are at stake.
Well, to be fair to JP, he did say for nerds like me.
Oh, well, you know, I'm a nerd like him too, but just the same, I also see the consequences.
No.
Well, I think JP would probably see the consequences as well.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I agree with your sentiment, and I think that what you are talking about is going to help galvanize Democratic voters in 2018, which is a lot of what the Democratic senators that might realize that Kavanaugh is likely to be confirmed anyway, but they want to expose his record to help galvanize voters in 2018.
Mm-hmm. I've been
That's
talking.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, that this will be used as a political tool. But I've been talking about the Supreme Court since the 2004 election when Kerry ran against Bush, you know, saying that the Supreme Court is at stake.
Why don't people get that?
Because it's so foreign to their lives. They
I've been explaining it too. You have.
I know. But unless something impacts somebody's life personally, they don't take it. It doesn't matter.
Okay, so if you're somebody, an independent voter in one of those three states that gave the extra 70,000 votes that got the minority candidate elected, Trump, you know, and your daughter is 15 years old and can't have an abortion, that's got to be personal, isn't it?
Well, one would hope it would be personal. One would hope that they would put the consequences facing their daughters above the partisan politics. But you never know, because some of those people might think that we should have parental consent for abortion. Some of those people might think that abortion should be illegal.
So we have we have 10 weeks now, as we, with the passing of Labor Day, we're now in this intense political cycle over the next 10 weeks between now and the midterms that JP was talking about a minute ago. The president spent Labor Day unleashing a raging tweet storm, blasting his beleaguered attorney general and other favorite targets, such as FBI Director James Comey, officials leading the Russia probe, and, of course, let's not forget, the media. But
the Sessions thing, Joe, is
the
unbelievable.
The Sessions thing is unbelievable.
What is he saying? He's saying you have no business indicting a sitting Republican congressman because they're Republicans.
Good job, Jeff. That's what the tweet said. Good job, Jeff. Two long-running Obama-era investigations of two very popular Republican congressmen were brought to a well-publicized charge just ahead of the midterms.
Both of whom, by the way, may get elected again, even though they're indicted.
Right.
By the Jeff Sessions Justice Department. Two easy wins now in doubt because there is not enough time. Good job, Jeff.
Well, all I could think of was watching John Kelly at John McCain's funeral saying to himself, what am I doing with the rest of my life? You know, I don't know if John Kelly will stick it out after the stunning rebuke at the funeral of everything Trump has said and stands for. And what he's doing now is just totally sabotaging the Justice Department.
Wait, Libby, are you really suggesting to those of us who are sitting in this room and out in the audience that John Kelly... that this is the tipping point for John Kelly? What the hell is he working for this guy for in the first place?
I get that. He was putting duty before whatever, but it's bizarre.
JP?
It's I think, very challenging for Trump to restrain himself without staff around him. And not that he restrains himself with staff around him, but when staff aren't around and he's on Labor Day weekend, he, I think, goes crazy and puts on to Twitter what is going through his head, which they try to restrict as much as possible.
Okay, but here's one that I'm sorry for cutting you off, but here's one because we only have a couple of seconds here. Now he is sending letters to Russia and to Iraq, right? Saying, because here is the potential for wag the dog, right?
Right.
Saying, don't you dare go in there and help Assad wipe out the last remaining area of dissonance there. And the first thing I thought of when that happened is, oh boy, what this guy really needs now in his own mind is a war.
Be bad news.
And that is with his friends, the Russians. So, but as we know, if there's one word that the guy can't spell, it's loyalty.
No kidding. It's a one-way street.
And
you to him.
So Alan's right. We just have a few moments here. But Paul Ryan, spokesperson Ashley Strong for Paul Ryan, said, responding to the tweet, says the Justice Department, quote, should always remain apolitical, and the speaker has demonstrated he takes these charges seriously.
I want to go there for a second and
big deal, right?
I want to go there for a second and tell you that my theory has always been the establishment Republicans don't like Trump. They hate him, they fear him, and they are delighted that they've got Mueller and the Mueller investigation in there, which is why Trump had to pick up the phone and call a bunch of them and try to get them over to his side so that he could fire Sessions.
Well, and I think that they're letting this whole thing play out. But while Rome is burning, they're getting all the policy they want.
Well, that's exactly right.
Right. They're getting all the policy.
That's exactly right. They want that part of it, but they don't want him because he's so dangerous.
But he doesn't understand, government. He thinks the White House counsel and Jeff Sessions should be his personal lawyers.
And this is where we disagree.
Because that's the only relationship he's ever had with lawyers.
And this is where we disagree. You think he doesn't understand government. You think he doesn't understand power. He does understand it. He got it. He's using it irresponsibly, of course. But that's what he's all about.
We are out of time. We are going to go over to hear what's happening in room 216 of the Hart Senate office building with NPR coverage. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.